Okay, make sure you're in fellowship here as we are looking at Judah's response to Joseph's predetermined claim of guilt. He pleads essentially no contest. Harry does not admit to the crime at hand. Rather, he alludes to God having found out their iniquity. His mention to God is obviously in challenge in response to Joseph's claim of the ability to divine, to practice divination. But it also shows what is truly weighing on Judah and brothers' minds in regards to why all this is happening in their life. And that is none other than what they did to Joseph some 22 years ago. Most commentaries recognize that's where Judah's coming from in this vein. He does not see them as guilty for the silver cup, but he sees some elongated form of judgment in time by God for their selling their brother Joseph off into slavery. And it recognizes that at this point in time in their history, they corporately now at least confess of their sin or acknowledge it before God in a form of rebound in this way. It is kind of abstract in its presentation, but yet it's just as effective because God reads their tape. He knows exactly what he is saying they found, he found in regard to their persons. And it at least gives us the indication that the brothers do come to ultimate grips in regards to their past sin, and they are on the road for reversion recovery in their lives. And that in light of the fact that they have made spiritual strides otherwise through their 22 years of living and listening to doctrine, but more importantly, in a corporate way, a brotherhood way, as they are representative of the nation. They come to a repentance and respect to their sin with Joseph. This is as clear as I can make it in regards to what's really going on here. And based on their guilt and a parallel of judgment for sin, this brings about and initiates Joseph's next words. As we saw, point 56, after the confession, Judah then evidences their orientation to God's will to accept judgment for their work. As he states, "Behold, we are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one in whose possession the cup has been found." Again, throughout this, there has been a subtle layer, additional layer of spiritual realities that's being brought about in regards to these words. So here we have it again. 57, Judah and company have determined that enslaving all concerned is just recompense for them selling Joseph into slavery. You've got to see where Judah's coming from in regards to his words. We were guilty of this. So we need to pay the price, basically. 58, this in light of returning to Canaan without Benjamin, risking further judgment for breaking their promise for safety to Jacob. You say, well, why include Benjamin? Well, you have kind of a cursing by association thrown into the mix here. But a worse judgment in their eyes is having to return without Benjamin. to face their father under these conditions. So they'll all just stay there. You're going to keep Benjamin anyway, see. He further recognizes that the penalty is to fit the crime, hence become slaves. That's what they did with Joseph. Obviously, Judah was the mastermind behind that plan. He's the one that suggested, well, let's just sell him off in slavery, and we'll get him out of our hair that way. So 61, the inclusion of Benjamin as a supposed guilty party of theft has further reaching implications. 62, obviously under the current situation, he has to answer for why he had the cup in his possession, even though he can't. He didn't put it there. He didn't know how it got there. 63, even if he is innocent, God has put him in the situation overall. In Judah's thinking, again, you've got to follow the line of doctrine that's being taken here by Judah. God's in control of circumstances. God's in control of their destiny. God has put him in this situation. And no matter how it may be for Benjamin otherwise, Benjamin's got to deal with it on his own personal level in regards to the test, as it would be. So 64, more importantly, we see the bond of the brotherhood, that if all did not return home, none would. We see now a cohesiveness that otherwise is not really seen in a unified fashion in such a way, especially in terms of the willingness to sacrifice on behalf of one another. What happens to one of us happens to all of us. So 65, now in light of the confession implying Joseph's kidnapping, of which Benjamin was not party to, it examples cursing by association. And that's exactly what happens in the national realm. Even though the majority of people may be guilty in regards to the sins that brings God's judgment upon a nation, there are those who are innocent of these things. But yet they get caught up and they get to feel the pressure, oppression, or whatever it may be in regards to God's judgment upon the nation overall. They get the fallout in the ramifications of the people's sins otherwise. But it doesn't mean that they're guilty in and of themselves. So here, Benjamin kind of fills that role when you're looking at it on that level. So 66, these principles and realities will be part of historical Israel as a nation under their kings. And again, the book of Daniel reflects that. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, all these guys were positive. But yet they had to endure the 70 years of being outside of Israel along with the rest of their compatriots who otherwise were negative to doctrine, reversionists, etc., bringing about the judgment upon Judah. In their case, in that vein. So, all these things point to that, recognizing that from these 12 brothers comes the tribes of Israel that makes up the nation. So, now verse 17, we have Joseph's response. So, 67, Joseph's response in verse 17 must be considered based on the following. First of all, he knows that Judah and company are all innocent of accusations and charges opposed upon them. all the way from the very initial, your spies, to you stole my silver cup. So he knows they're innocent. So in that vein, he would naturally ask himself why they are now appealing to God in admission of guilt otherwise of some sin. Well, what sin are they talking about? So see, he still, on top of it all, is driven to hold to his plan of keeping Benjamin with him, putting his brothers in the situation of returning home, having to explain his absence. That is, if you will, one of the major goals of revenge, recognizing the value of Benjamin with respect to his father Jacob to a certain degree. And to really get even with the brothers, let them go home. The first time they had to go without Simeon, now go without Benjamin. One that he knows that father was reluctant to let go to begin with. Maybe not how reluctant, but definitely reluctant. So all these things have to be considered, and they influence his words. So 68, Joseph's reply to Judah here, in verse 17, contains elements of both of sarcasm and discernment. Quote, "Far be it from me to do this. Halil, Lamed, Men, Asa, Zov," end quote. To do what? To enslave them, all of them. But, on the other end of the coin, I've still got my revenge I got to get, so I am going to keep Benjamin. So, 69, now he borrows the same interjectory particle, Halil in the Hebrew, translated "far be it," opening his remarks that his brothers used in verse 7, denying their guilt of criminal character before the steward, when they stood before the steward, when he came to arrest him and accused him of returning evil for good and stealing his cup, etc. Their response, "Far be it from your servants to do such a thing." So the same interjectory particle, and Joseph uses and borrows this. So 70, obviously the steward would have reported back to Joseph exactly his conversation with the brothers earlier, what they had to say. This is what they said. They denied it adamantly. "Far be it, Halil." So 71, in view of Judah's offer to arrest all as guilty, Joseph sarcastically denies his character as one so unjust to render judgment of guilty upon those otherwise innocent. So in that sense, it's sarcasm. Make us all slaves. We're all in this together. I'm not going to do it. Far be it for me to do that. See? So 72, it is sarcastic in view of the brothers' claim that they would not render, quote, evil for good, end quote. So on both sides of the coin, you have an example of hypocrisy going on. To a certain degree, at least. But then on the other end of the coin, it's swapped, and depending on the parties who you're looking at. Obviously, the brothers is hypocritical, what they did to Joseph, returning evil for good there. But in regards to stealing the silver cup, no, they didn't do it. With Joseph, it's kind of reversed. He's not going to punish the innocent. But on the other end of the coin, he is punishing the innocent. See? So, I try to dig into this as best I can and relate it to you, but so, 71 again, in view of Judah's offer to arrest all as guilty, Joseph sarcastically denies his character as one so unjust to render judgment of guilty upon those otherwise innocent. 72, it is sarcastic in view of the brothers' claim that they would not render evil for good. 73, now the remainder of his verdict. Quote, the man in whose possession the cup has been found, he will be my slave, but as for you, go up in peace to your father. In other words, go home. Ha'ish asher matzah ha'gediyah bet yad hu hayah lamed bed wa'o tim Allah lamed shalom el ava. That clause is then easily understood in that context. So in the context of being sarcastic, that he would not punish the innocent, his words here are easily understood in that context. 74, the phrase go up in peace means they can return without further civil detention. In other words, you're guaranteed safe passage. Not going to send anybody else after you, arrest you later on or anything like that. 74. So now we kind of get back to the situation of what Joseph knows concerning his brothers and how he would have the insight to catch the drift of Judah's confession. So 75, yet there is previous context that suggests further discernment by Joseph as to Judah's confession of guilt before God. 76, that is, as it was an enigmatic confession of Joseph's betrayal. Subliminal, if you will. 77, remember back on the first trip when the brothers' conversation between them, they thought private, was disclosed as an interpreter close by reported their words to Joseph. That's, again, we read that, 42, 21 through 23, last class. Reuben kicked it off, and they all kind of came to the same gnosis or knowledge or agreement in that regard. 78, in that conversation, they revealed that they thought their betrayal of Joseph was the catalyst for the ill events before them. This is what has ticked God off, really, and why this is happening to them. 79, so the clause, quote, far be it from me to do this, end quote, is also a cloaked denial by Joseph that his actions toward them is God's judgment upon the 10 brothers, excluding Benjamin, 10, 11 with Benjamin, for their part in his enslavement. Stick with me on this. It's a cloaked denial, far be it from me to do this, by Joseph, that his actions towards him is God's judgment upon the 10 brothers to enslave them for their part in his enslavement. Discerning that that's what Judah was inferring. So 80, Joseph's unsolicited and voluntary comments to his brothers that his enslavement was God's will for him after he discloses his real identity in chapter 45, 5 through 8, supports this premise. He knows this already, see. Understand, he's running under his sin nature, but this doesn't wipe out his doctrine. People can run under their sin nature and they can still retain doctrine in their thinking. And he has already come to grips with the fact that this whole situation with him being in Egypt was God's will for his life, And now, truly, after the fact, he sees exactly, probably even more clearly, why. And that is protection in regards to the family and their livelihood. And he's unsolicited in regards to revealing this information. Nobody has to spur him on. He just voluntarily tells it. And as he goes to the ancestor, reveals himself in verse 5 of 45, "And now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here." You need to get off that tin can. See? Because they're still carrying this whole guilt with them, this whole guilt trip with them. "Because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." To preserve life. "For the famine has been in the land," verse 6, "these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting." In verse 7, "And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant of the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance." Verse 8, "Now therefore it is not you who sent me here." Wow, now this is real doctrine. Or, of course, this is what you would expect from Joseph. See. But for a while, man, he wanted his brothers to taste the same thing that he tasted. So, "Now therefore is not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his household, and ruler over all the land of Egypt." No, not that he said that after that. But, you know, if he wanted to get under his STA, that's why he probably would have done. Ruler over all the land of Egypt. So, you got to put all this into the mix when you're looking at these words and trying to figure out where are they coming from? Is it just this whole thing about the silver cup? No, it's not. It's deeper than that, which hopefully I've been able to at least extract some of it out for you. So 81, so Joseph reads Judah's tape, so to speak, here, as to his confession. It denies that the fiasco before them had to do with God judging them through Joseph. As I pointed out, Joseph is judging them himself under energy of the flesh. Joseph is running under God's permissive will at this point in time in his life. It's not God's directive will. Yeah, it still may hurt. Cursing by association. Okay. Whatever. So Joseph reads Judah's tape here. He discerns where Judah's coming from as to his confession and denies that the fiasco before them has to do with God judging them through Joseph. 82, further, it is an implicit acknowledgement by Joseph that all that is actually going on is STA driven by his own person. He tends to leak things out in a very subtle way in his words, as we've seen in regards to his conversation with his brothers. And here, he's doing it again. "I'm just under my STA." But he's not going to reveal that to them. Not yet. They'll figure it out. So 83, the brothers on this occasion are actually under undeserved suffering. They're innocent of that silver cup. And that's these are one of these areas that commentaries generally will not get that deep into the scriptures. Will not dig into it that deep. But they're innocent. And everybody just wants to wave the flag how guilty they were 22 years ago. Well, yeah, they were. They recognize it. It's still eating their lunch. But it is all part of God's divine design for the family in spite of what they did. And whatever judgment they came upon is possible, real possible, that a lot of it just came back through their own self-derived judgment, feeling guilty over all these years, self-induced misery, the misery in the family with their father, Jacob. All these things. I mean, there's plenty of areas that God could have jammed him for. And again, on the other end of the coin, you know, if they were truly looking for actual righteousness and judgment against him, they would have said, kill us all. Because that's the penalty for kidnapping. You know. So, anyway. They are experiencing what they're experiencing because Joseph is running under his sin nature. He is engaged in revenge tactics and bringing this misery upon their own lives. Otherwise, their misery is self-induced as they continue to carry the guilt over these 22 years and had not really dealt with it until at this point in time. Here, it appears that for once, finally, they are just coming completely clean before God. 84, in this spiritual context, the releasing of the 10 brothers here illustrates their freedom before God as to their judgment in the Joseph affair. So I'm not going to enslave you. I'm not going to be God's whipping post in that vein. I'm just going to get you with my own STA. I think it's pretty cool stuff. This is real. This is real life here. This is the way the human being functions. This is the way believers function. And the way they think often under their sin natures, etc. Especially one with years and years of doctrine. So, no, I'm not going, far be it for me to enslave all of you. Based on implicitly your confession before God, what you did to me 22 years ago. 85, this is especially apropos following Judah's confession. Following Judah's confession. You don't go around and kick a lying dog, in other words. It's what Paul had to, in 2 Corinthians, had to write to the Corinthians in regards to the incestuous Corinthians, that when he made reversion recovery, he came back to Bible class, a quick kick at the guy while he's down. See? That's inappropriate too. You don't bring down additional sorrow, misery, and things of this nature. It's the same kind of idea is what I'm bringing out here. So 86, further it puts another spin on the closing remarks for the brothers to, quote, go up in peace to your father, end quote. So, see the two levels. It can be understood on either level. Letting go because of the silver cup. There's no more civil actions going to be taken to you, upon you. And then here to have inner peace. Because truly God forgives you of your sin. This is how God is working this whole thing out. So 87, now keeping Benjamin in the latter context is simply Joseph still intent on following through with his revenge plan. He's still not done with that yet. It's going to take a very sound, logical appeal by Judah that will hit home, for God knew it would, in Joseph's mind to finally break through the ice of his STA revenge here in this regards. And that is the one missing party that otherwise might stimulate Joseph's compassion, which Benjamin, as we've seen that, caused him to weep, to cry when he saw him, is his father. And when we get into Judah's appeal, we'll see his father mentioned 14 times in those verses. And his speech, at this point in time, after going through that, in my own thinking, I'm fairly convinced that Judah has made reversion recovery in his life over his previous years. But Joseph is one who still gets the rights of primogeniture. Rest of the brothers, I'm still not for sure about all of them, but either way. I would speculate at this point that probably they did, but we'll see. We're not done with the book yet. So the fact that he's going to keep Benjamin is nothing less or more than him sticking with his revenge plan. 88, not until Judah reveals the complete truth in the matter will Joseph relinquish his STA hold. We have these elements of straightforwardness and truth that is now going to be brought before Joseph by Judah. All these things have impact in regards to Joseph's thinking, etc. 89, so again, we see the example of a positive believer, otherwise running under his STA, and simultaneously still able to implement doctrinal thought. Just because people get under their sin nature doesn't mean that they've shoveled all doctrine out the window. Now, for a while, they may be trampling all over some doctrine and rationalizing it or dismissing it, if not rejecting it. But not all doctrine. Again, this is the an element of character you'll find in positive volition that runs across situations like this. Someone's negative, generally that doctrine will go out the window. So you gotta keep that in mind as part of the complexity of the paradox Christian life. Joseph examples that even a great believer can be a nasty customer running under the STA. Can stoop low, even trying to leverage doctrine to assist his STA agenda. You don't think your STA does that? Come on. It does it probably quite often. You may not be sensitive to it. You may not recognize it, but it does it. With doctrine I can rationalize doing this under the energy of the flesh or whatever. You know. Paul himself said he didn't have issues with certain parts of STA except when doctrine came into view, and then there was issues. And obviously the doctrine, he utilized it in some way to rationalize in some of his STA deal. Sometimes it's not rationalization. Sometimes it's just, I'm going to do it. But, you know, there is the price to pay whatever decisions you make, one way or the other. The loss of SU3 to not to be the least of your thoughts. In 91, Joseph here has been deceitful, lied outright, pursued revenge tactics, used doctrine as a weapon, and even planted evidence. He engaged in illegal activity in the moral ethical world. And again, how many commentators just gloss right over all this stuff? How many believers are just so blind in regards to the sin of life, in regards to even adjusted positive believers otherwise? Self-righteousness rules the world. That is Satan's great counterfeit to God's righteousness. And you can only really make yourself feel good when you implement self-righteousness in your life. Look at how much better I am now. When the reality is, your flesh is no better than it was the day you were born. You're just as simple in regards to your nature as you was then, see. The only difference is you went on poly volition and you've drawn on God's grace in order to deal with it, see, and to overrule it and to be victorious over it and all the other things that salvation provides for us in that regard. 92, he has been a lousy witness to the steward in spite of good witness otherwise and others around him during this period in his life. What kind of message is he sending to the steward? The steward, well, he's in this thing too. You know. But then we saw the doctrine come out of the steward's mouth. You go, what is this? Well, that's reality. 93, he has hypocritically put pressure on his brother Benjamin now that he claims love for otherwise. You can see in this sense, in regards to Benjamin, he's in this total selfish mode. I want my younger brother with me. He can do better here. Whatever rationalization. I'm the king of Egypt. He'll never have to go hungrier than me. This will get me, even with my brothers this way. In regards to their father and all these other things. The whole time, all he's doing is putting the screws to Benjamin. He's putting him under all this pressure. And yet, he's so, my brother, I cried over him. I love him so much. Well, put that in your pipe and smoke it. So, hypocrisy. And of course, hypocrisy generally follows the SCA in regards to those who are otherwise seeking to do the right thing in life. 94, he truly examples the paradox of the Christian life. Enjoy your break. I'm letting you out early. See you next year. Father, again, thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, to enlighten us these things in Jesus' name. Amen.